Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's returning guest is my friend Tara Edwards, a writer, editor, and Twitch streamer based in Ohio, known for her work in the digital media landscape. In this conversation, we're deep diving into our upcoming 10-week online writer's workshop called Good Grief, a writing workshop on trauma and healing. Inspired by our training and experience in psychology, coaching, and writing, this queer, Asian, BIPOC-led workshop combines general teachings around grief, creative expression, and healing with writing practice and community support. It's a great space to cultivate transmuting grief outside of professional, romantic, familial, and competitive arenas. To learn more, check out the registration link in the show notes for more details, or visit www.robertkwonhome.com and click on my writing page for my upcoming engagements. So, Kendrick won, and that is the theme of today's episode.
I mean, something I want to point out because there has been, in fact, one of Drake's own criticisms was this idea that Kendrick takes himself too seriously and that his music is, you know, not fun or whatever. I think what Kendrick does is he takes these very heavy topics and his, you know, experience and makes it into this very beautiful, gorgeous music. I think the perfect paradox to describe that is Swimming Pools, which came out. It was a pre-release track for Good Kid, Mad City, which is now the longest charting rap album in history. It's been on the charts for 11 years, so pretty much since it ever came out.
Dang.
And Swimming Pools sounds like a party song about getting drunk, but it's actually a critique of alcoholism at the same time, about how like alcohol won't solve your problems and can create additional problems. And then when you put the song in the context of the album, you realize that his method of coping, you know, alcohol and drugs and friends, not friendship, like a bad thing, but like just kind of, you know, having negative influences, it ended up, you know, creating its own trauma of seeing his brother's best friend die.
That is certainly an example of people using writing to process things that sometimes you can't process all at once, or you can't solve it all in one moment, one decision. And, you know, we were kind of joking starting with that because we were just catching up before recording. But, you know, looking at the most recent kind of pop culture moment amongst rap and hip hop, Kendrick Lamar is so demonstrative of the power of writing.
I mean, he has a Pulitzer and people just like, you know, gloss over that. That was a big moment. Granted, I think if I had to give an album a Pulitzer, I would have gave it to Good Kid, Mad City. But damn, his body of work still represents the kind of poetry that allowed for Tupac to be taught in classrooms, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing about hip hop too, and this kind of misconception of the genre that it's like just a bunch of, you know, guns and sex and drugs and misogyny. But like the original expression, the original hip hop was about oppression and, you know, expressing oneself about the oppression they were experiencing in their communities.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes it such a, you know, I can't dive into this discourse, but, you know, it's an African-American origin and the African-American roots really matter in certain aspects like hip hop and rap. So, I mean, it's just something that we've both been like fascinated by, and I love a good deep lyric or media or story analysis. So this has been kind of a fun thing to be like observing as we are coming together to run our own writing workshop based on some themes that might be familiar to some folks. So kind of a clumsy transition, but
I have a nice transition.
Please.
Kendrick's last album, which got a lot of criticism because it included rapper Kodak Black, who is a known convicted essayer. I still think the album has a lot to offer, specifically around trauma and transformation. To me, that's the symbol of the entire album for him. Is the first half is about his trauma, and the second half is about how he healed from it and how he transformed from different kind of traumas he had, like, you know, the trauma of his family history with his parents and his family members who were queer and trans, and, you know, seeing how they navigate society and also transform their pain into something magical and beautiful.
And that's sort of the possibility that's on the other side of having experienced the tougher things in life. Certainly we are borrowing from our own personal experiences a little bit, which is why we're interested in kind of leading around this space. We both have degrees in writing. That's how we met. And you also have a degree in psychology. And I also have training and expertise in personal development and coaching. And we wanted to come together for a workshop that we're calling Good Grief, a writing workshop on trauma and healing. So, like, to start off, I guess I'll ask you, even though I know you very well, where does your passion and interest in psychology, therapy, but also like storytelling come from?
I think every person who has some kind of like mental health journey dabbles at some point in psychology. I think psychology was, for me, first, it was like an interest because I wanted to learn more about myself. I wanted to give myself terminology and tools and understanding like the human experience better, just on a personal level. But then also it felt very complementary to storytelling, is because
yeah,
there's always the what comes first, the character or the plot. And for me, characters are always first. And so I find psychology to be really foundational in the sense of you can really create so much complex or complexity around your characters if you have a psychological understanding of humans and why they might do things.
Yeah, I think for me, I always found that to be a natural like overlap, in that in order to understand human beings and each other better, and therefore, you know, relationships, topics around our health, that we would dive into, well, what is this individual's personal narrative around something or other? What is their perspective? What motivates them? And in writing, we care so much about motivation, but we also care about that in our personal life and what's motivating our behaviors. And to me, it always seemed like they were natural companions, that you can't dive into one into like something like the psychological mindset without diving into narrative and storytelling. So I was like, makes sense why you went to school for both at the same time.
Yeah. And if you really think about, I know everyone always thinks of Freud as like the sort of father of psychology or whatever, but Carl Jung had a lot of storytelling devices as part of his psychological theories. Like, he was big on the idea of archetypes and, like, you know, images and symbolisms that would show up over and over and over in your life as a part of your psychological makeup.
That's so true. Especially some of the earlier stances and theories were very much born out of the shape of a narrative arc in some ways. And obviously, I think you can't help but be influenced by the storytelling, the entertainment, the books that you're reading around you, right? So I think it kind of like feeds into each other. For our workshop, just a little bit more detail about it, it's going to be online, and it's going to be 10 weeks, every week on Mondays. Some of the things that we wanted to introduce outright is the fact that we're not going to be pretending to be therapists and counselors and things like that. even though we have a passion and interest in certain areas. But the workshop is really, and you let me know like how this sounds, because I think we talked about it, but it's kind of like part classroom, but then also infusing that with our creative expression, talent, our gifts, the stories that fascinate us and things like that. So do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I was immediately going to jump in and say that, like, I don't think that that is on accident. I think that current research, at least into trauma therapy, is kind of based around this model of first you must learn about what trauma is, what trauma feels like. You get terminology around things you may not have had words for. I think a perfect example is dysphoria. I think a lot of people have experienced dysphoria but don't know what to call it. And so there is a little bit of empowerment in giving language to feelings that people may have had or experienced they've had. Once you learn about those things, you're better able to pick them apart and make them more, you know, narratively applicable to yourself, right? You can decide whether or not something applies to you, or if it's just, you know, a thing that's completely alien to you.
Yeah.
And then I also just feel like storytelling constantly comes up in trauma therapy and just therapy in general, because what is talk therapy if not a person telling a story about their lives? And they make certain choices about how they tell that story. And the therapist's job is to interpret that story and do the kind of analysis that a literary analysis would happen on the page, right? Like, yeah, you learn, you know, what are these terms? What is an allegory? What is symbolism? What is poetic justice? And I think it's very parallel on purpose, because in a lot of ways, to be human is to be a storyteller of some kind. And that's why I think everybody can benefit from not only this workshop, but just the act of writing about their lives, journaling, bullet journaling, just like any kind of self-reflecting on the page, because it allows you to get in that headspace of seeing angles that you may not have seen before, because you have this physical thing that you can look at.
We are not going to be in this space diagnosticians. We're not going to be doing, you know, nothing prescriptive like that. We're aware of that and we respect that. You know, at the same time, finding language for your experience and your struggles and difficulties is so powerful and honestly, like, crucial to the therapeutic process at the same time. You can work and acknowledge and address something once you find the language for it. And it just so happens the writing process can so help with that part. And I think for both of us, we were sort of unconsciously exploring that, doing that. We were writing, you know, fiction, for example, but I think for just knowing the type of writers we are, we were both subconsciously trying to explore like aspects of life and the meaning of life at the same time. What does it mean for us? I really got to dive into therapy after I graduated from grad school. At the time, maybe it felt like it might have been too much, or there was just like an extreme focus on making the grad experience worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But after that, I sort of naturally started exploring like self-care, holding conversations with people about how to improve your quality of life, and diving into therapy, and having really explored that a lot since then. So it's just a little bit about that. And I think we sort of share that in some ways. Yeah.
It feels very much like a natural progression too, just as people who have experienced different things. I'll just speak for myself that like the narrative of a trauma survivor really speaks to me because of that recognition of seeing your life as both something you've enclosed to keep yourself safe, but then also wanting to go outside of that safety because, you know, you want to chase. It's like the paradox of like wanting to chase your dreams and then being so afraid of like those dreams being nightmares, essentially.
You want something and then you're confronted with the reality of what it is you're wanting in some ways. And that definitely happened, I think, for us, especially like we were in our
mid-20s also. Another thing that we kind of want to establish is that we will be using certain terms that are therapeutic or psychological in nature, but mostly we want to just offer people definitions as part of that working. Do you want to talk about why it's sort of important to have both definitions, but also understand like each of us may relate or associate to like a word like trauma or PTSD a little differently?
This is funny that you asked me this question because our experience in the queer community as well, I think we can get a little bit caught up in obsessing over labels and how accurately they speak to things. So it can be a little bit daunting. But I think in the case of psychology and also this workshop that we're doing is that it's a tool. It's a tool in any sense that like a hammer is only dangerous in the wrong hands, right? So it's like you can decide to use a hammer or you can decide to use something else. So the language really is only a service to whether it helps you. And if it doesn't help you, then you can, you know, leave it behind. Another thing that's kind of related to this that I want to talk about is like another reason why I want to do this workshop. So much of Western psychology theory is inaccessible, expensive, and very much a solo journey. It's hard to find a therapist that you can vibe with. It's hard to find a therapist that takes insurance. It's hard to find a therapist in your area. It's hard to find a therapist that is able to suit your needs, because even therapists have protocols for when they know they're probably not the best person to treat a patient. Yeah. It's just, for me, this workshop is like a nice alternative to not therapy, but an alternative to the system of therapy that has all of these hard rules that people need to go through. And this workshop instead is like a little in-between for people who maybe can't pay to see a regular therapist, but really want not only a therapeutic environment, but also community. Because that's also one of the things that therapists who treat trauma patients talk about, is that community is such an important part of healing. Like, we need other people in our corner, but it's really hard to foster community in a one-on-one therapy session. Like, you can't go and say, now these are all of my friends and you should be friends with them. But like, the nice thing about being in a group setting is that you can feel less alone and begin to see other people's experiences and have them mirror that back to you, and also kind of grow together in an environment. I just think group therapy is definitely underutilized, but I also just think community-based building, like this workshop, just a community-based thing, is so, so important, especially in the kind of dire times that we're in.
As someone who's had plenty of experience in, you know, one-on-one experiences in therapy, and then some couples, and I've done like a couple like support groups that an organization will offer here and there. But yeah, the dynamic is so different in a group setting that I think can add a lot of like value, even when we're deep diving in some personal journey stuff. You don't have to imagine other perspectives. You can just be in a space where you're going to hear different perspectives on the same issue. And I think that can be a valuable thing to have in our sphere when we're hyper-focusing on something that can be kind of intense. And having a group experience can sort of just alleviate some of the feeling of obligation and responsibility. Because we did say it is a responsibility, but I also understand why some people can hear that and find that isolating. And hopefully we can have like a both and in this group.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely something that I used to be very anti-group therapy. I used to think there's just absolutely no way you're going to get me into a room of like other people and expect me to like understand their perspective, until I took a DBT group, which is dialectical behavior therapy.
We got it.
which is a treatment that was mainly focused on treating patients with borderline personality. But then it was also expanded to trauma therapy because there's a lot of overlap. But my experience in that group therapy was it offered to me the kind of different perspectives that you were talking about. It's like, because I was very much in a nobody's experienced this thing. This thing is very specific to me and nobody can relate or really truly get it. And then I was in that therapy group and I was like, okay, somebody got it. And I also just think like the pressure you're talking about, responsibility, like you can feel a lot of intense pressure one-on-one, whereas like in a group setting, you can sometimes you don't have to talk and you can just let other people, you know, vibe, and it can still be just as therapeutic as if you were the person who decided to share that week. I just think the camaraderie you build around the work you do in a group setting is still very powerful.
Yeah, we're both gymnastics fans, and it just reminds me of like even when an athlete is like out or has an injury or in recovery, they'll often show up at the gym because it's just good to even like watch other people do training, to just be immersed in that environment in some way. And I think that kind of like reminds me of what you're talking about. You certainly don't have to show up, for example, necessarily having the biggest baggage or something. It's not a competition. You can get something out of this space simply by being with community and making space for things that are important for you, whether they're traumatic or difficult or not. And it doesn't
the other thing I wanted to say too in that vein is like, it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily need to come to this workshop if you want to, just because you experience trauma. There is a part of this that is just also about grief, and grief is just a part of the natural human experience. So if you're experiencing grief around, it could be literally anything from like losing a job to losing a family member to having a very difficult life change, this is also a space for that as well.
Yeah, I love having a space where we like use the word grief, because it doesn't have to be something that is, for example, about you being in control of something. It can be something that's just an experience that's universal that can still be challenging. And it's good to be in a communal space for that. Another thing I will add as a coach is, you know, based on my personal experience in groups and like incubators and group training and one-on-one training and all of that, I often found that participants at the end, they can get a lot, they can achieve a lot, they can accomplish a lot, they can certainly learn like insights and new like information for their knowledge. But a lot of times people are leaving these group experiences, like the one part that may be a little bit lingering or not resolved is usually something that's like hard to make specific, like grief, because you can grief about the world, existence, our land, and it doesn't have to be something that happened, quote unquote, directly to you. I just often feel like we don't make proper space for something like grief. And then what can happen is, not to say everyone does this, is we like double up. We haven't resolved our grief around something, but maybe we can get a promotion out of it. Maybe we can like use that energy to propel us in some other way in our life. But sometimes that can even make the grief exacerbate the grief. Like it can feel a little bit icky to be like, well, I got a boyfriend even though I was sad, but that's okay now.
Yeah, it makes me think of that that like viral tweet about how grief is not like, grief doesn't go away, you simply grow around the grief and learn to live with it. And I think one of the things that's always kind of speaks to me around grief and just mental health in general is that there is this tendency to believe that a single solution will ultimately result in, you know, some magic trick of, and now everything's fine and we're all good. And I think the beauty of being in a group like this is you can see how that sort of black and white thinking of going from I was bad, now I'm good, and can be very, you know, detrimental. And instead we can go to a headspace where I'm still struggling with this and it may take me a long time, but I feel better about being in this struggle because I know that I have people with me and that, you know, the struggle is not forever.
Yeah, you're so spot on in that, like, you're catching what I'm observing as well, which is like, we can't measure our experience or quote unquote progress around grief the same way that we would measure the other things in our life, mm-hmm. like career advancement. It's not a step by step like that. So sometimes I find there are aspects to us that feel like, oh, this is not the proper space for that. And it may be something around grief, which is that it's not something we typically voluntarily make space for unless we're pushed to that. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to be like, you don't need to be pushed into that. You can just make it a regular thing that all humans, you know, experience.
Yeah, you don't need to like, you know, go on some sort of grief retreat. You can literally just come to this workshop and be like, I got fired and I'm still really struggling with that. Then right. you can write about it.
Yeah.
You can write nothing about it. You could decide to do a fantasy story about a magical witch in the forest who fights a ugly monster who says things like, let's circle back on that on Tuesday. That can be therapeutic to you because that's the beauty of writing, right? Is that you can write about things directly if you want to, but you can also use tools from other types of writing like fiction and poetry to express yourself, mm-hmm. but in a more creative way so that you can feel safe around the topic.
And I think the less we try to avoid that, the less likely it'll just show up when we don't want it to in other mm-hmm. areas of our life. And I think I also feel that way about creative expression, why I champion that and value it, even though to some people it's sort of just like there, where it's kind of a soft skill, because it's a space for us to meet our needs in ways that we can't in other areas of our life, but we can make the creative space whatever we want it to be. I was recently at like a concert in Brooklyn and I saw this guy who kind of looked like a Wall Street mm-hmm. executive type, playing the most random futuristic electronic keyboard stuff that some people might be into. But I remember having a moment of just like, yeah, I bet he does this thing that probably could be very weird and niche and kooky, but also he probably can't get that need met anywhere else in his everyday life. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some power in like curating your creative space to make it be something that's fulfilling for you that you can't really find in other spaces. There's a kind of like self-determination there. And I also think that's also powerful for someone's quote unquote trauma healing journey. Find the places where you can choose powerfully and see what happens.
And there's also like a biological need for creative expression and play. I mean, Brené Brown said it better than this, which is that, like, you know, there's all of this evolutionary psychology around us, you know, still just being primates who need to like do goofy ass shit to, you know, cope with the fact that, you know, we're on the grind every day trying to make money and feed ourselves and take care of our family and take care of ourselves and take care of our, you know, immediate like friend groups and what have you. And that kind of grinding and pressure, you can't do that 24/7 without some kind of relief. We need something, some kind of outlet, and creative outlets do the kind of twofold thing of being both an opportunity to play and explore that, you know, child elements of play, while also being very therapeutic in the sense that you have this thing at the end that you can go back to and be like, look at what I was able to create when I allowed myself this freedom to do so.
And that's something we've both, I think, experienced here and there in our lives, even though we've both also dealt with like creative blocks and stuff like that, which often, by the way, is intertwined with our personal healing journey. Mm-hmm. Just a little spoiler. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're often just like dovetail all the time for us. But can you think of a, like an example or a time when the writing process or the writing experience really supported your like personal healing journey?
I think when I first began trauma-based therapy, journaling and then also starting a memoir about my life, became a kind of reflexiveness necessity because I needed to get out of my head. To me, there's nothing more dangerous than my own mind. I think my own mind is capable of the most horrifying things I've ever witnessed. And so I find myself constantly needing to get out of my own head and get out of that space of like destructive thinking. And the beauty of writing is that you can write anything. You can decide to tell a story about anything. But for me, the reflective process of looking back on things I wrote and being able to say, no, I want to say it like this instead. No, I think I've only scratched the surface here. I think I need to go deeper here. Or this shit is fucking good. I'm a genius. Like, that, I think, is also, or at least for me, was one of those moments where it's like, it's both validating because I'm telling my truth and the truth is there for me to point to again and again and again whenever I start to doubt myself. And it also, you know, strokes the ego a little bit because it's like sometimes you go back and you're like, wait, I really nailed that description so perfectly.
Yeah, it's almost like you were both examining yourself and going through the dark night of the soul. But at the same time, just the very nature of writing means you create possibilities to share the work or to kind of look at it from a distance and to like edit the work, which can be a very interesting journey as well. And it can create an outer change, which is like pretty powerful when it's just through your creative expression.
Yeah.
You know, that you can change reality.
It reminds me of the dream I had where I just, in the middle of the dream, I just decided to, oh, I summon 3 FBI agents to be my posse against this like stalker. And then now I've changed the entire story. And you can do that on the page as well. It's like, I guess spoiler, or perhaps not even a spoiler, but just like an activity someone listening to this can do is like take something awful that happened and rewrite the story as if you had a superhero or some kind of expert lawyer on your side or Olivia Benson from SVU in your corner arguing for you. And that becomes, you know, therapeutic on its own because you go from being very lonely and isolated in that situation to having a expert in your corner arguing for you.
I love the creative power that you're pointing to. And also it points to something that I know Brené Brown and others have also talked about, which is like, it's really important to remind yourself that you get to write your own ending, despite life's uncertainties, what your life means and what was valuable about it and who are the people you loved. Like, these are the things that you get to determine no matter what. Just the very fact that you're here able to engage in this way, talking about maybe joining a workshop around writing and healing your grief, that in and of itself can be a path towards a future that may be something different and something new, and that could be really exciting. There's always like that part in my journey where I realize like, oh, I never really thought about what I would do with my life if there was a like an end to my trauma work. I just kind of really played it out like it's like some kind of terminal condition, like it's a physical disability or something, but it's not, I would argue. It's really interesting being like, I didn't spend enough time thinking about like how I would devote my time if I ever got over this hump. But really what I would prefer to do is writing and connecting with people and creative expression. So here we are.
I mean, you're also speaking to the thing about being in the grief, right? Like when you're in it, you don't see a way out. You think this is the permanent end all be all. This is it, so to speak. So like when you offer that creative thought, it's like, what would you do if you could get a magic pill and wake up tomorrow and you don't feel sad anymore? And the possibilities just become incredible and imaginative, or even just mundane, as such as like, I will get up tomorrow and go get ice cream because I can and I want to.
I had a moment that it's semi-writing related to me, even though it's music. It's like music composition. But like doing this work opened me up to like not getting into my head with like improvising and things like that. And that was so life-changing for me. I've been wanting that my entire life, basically. And I didn't think, even though humans compose, like there are human composers, obviously, I just didn't think it was possible for me. And that really determined my reality until one day I just kind of like, well, what if it wasn't? Let me sit down and be with it. And I did use what I would say is like a mindfulness and therapeutic process. I used the knowledge and the tools I had to practice in my dark night of the soul to help me enjoy the things I love.
Yeah. And that, it just goes back to like the power of creativity, right? Is that the possibilities really do become endless if you just say, what if it wasn't that? What if this happened and this thing changed and I moved this here? What could I have? What could I have done? Who can I be now with these different pieces that I've decided to rewrite the story on? Now I want to go, how many pages have I written? Alan Wake style.
Yeah, that's a man that could have used some therapy, that's for sure. But maybe also a writer's group, now that I think about it. He was just way too isolated.
Yeah. I mean, and he had a magic clicker and
no. Oh, which, you know, I use that word isolation like once or twice in this conversation, but I am being serious about like driving that home, which is when we don't make space for these things that are uncomfortable, they're not really happy, shiny, maybe on paper, on surface to be a space like that. But it's so important to make room for all of this so that it doesn't like spill over. I don't know. There's just different ways to deal with grief that I think can work out better. For example, this might be an interesting space for you to find some support, establish meaning of like what your life experience might be, and practice your communication and expression skills before going to something like a coaching training. In certain spaces, for example, in career, it may not be the priority to hold your grief in that space. And that's okay, depending on where you are in your journey. Just to bring that up as well, because we did create this space with the intention of it being like an additive support for the other arenas that we deeply care about. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to step over, but actually we're trying to offer things that can help further support people's development in whatever way they want.
Yeah, I was just thinking about like the idea of things spilling over in places that may be inappropriate. Specifically, Brené Brown talked about how when faced with these kind of, I guess, difficult conversations, people might shy away or kind of like shut down these situations because A, maybe it's not appropriate for the water cooler at 9 a.m. or B, it's, you know, people have their own stuff and they just don't have the space to take care of responsibly someone else's emotions in that moment. And so like, this is not to say that you should hold everything in until you can get to, you know,
no,
a proper space. But it also, the thing is like, you'll find yourself less and less in those situations where you feel you need to hold everything in. When you make time and effort, whether it's every day, every couple of days, whatever you need to say, how am I feeling? What's going on with me lately? Am I in a bad mood? Why am I in a bad mood? And just, you know, meditate on these concepts, both literally, you could meditate, but also just kind of meditate on the page and, you know, marinate in your emotions, because I think, unfortunately, as a society, we do often spend time not to have emotions, to just shove everything away, to just, you know, in the sake of being productive. I think it's important in this workshop and also just in life in general to say, today I'm going to express my emotions and I'm going to own them. And then I'm going to sit with them and process them.
Yeah. Combining the writing practice with the group experience, we're being very deliberate with that because we've both benefited from that so much exactly because of what you're saying. As much as people can make an argument that certain spaces, certain times, expressing things like our grief may not be quote unquote appropriate, because in public society, it can be regulated and policed in some ways, our emotionality. Mm-hmm. So, but if you try to just repress it and suppress it, the only thing that you're going to experience with the things that you don't think are appropriate is isolation, mm-hmm. like deep isolation. There's nowhere for it to be acknowledged by someone else. And we're saying that's not uncommon. Grief is universal. It is understandable to experience grief during certain times, but we're just trying to make a space where you don't have to worry about those things so much. And then show up to those other spaces and prioritize it, focus on whatever else is important to you. They can all be valid.
Yeah. And that's also making me think of this concept of like, what is a safe space really? Because I know safe spaces became like a buzzword for like conservatives and all kinds of people. But for this purpose, and at least for my own beliefs, I think a safe space in this case just means a place that you can bring your whole self or none of yourself or whatever version of yourself you would like to bring. Own that and just be how you want to be without feeling, you know, the pressure to do anything. Like this is supposed to be like a non-pressured safe space. And also, it's a place that is safe from judgment.
Yeah.
We don't want to judge anyone for, you know, whatever self-destructive behaviors they might have. As you've often said to me, those destructive behaviors were necessary to protect yourself in those moments.
Yeah.
And while it might not be sustainable, it's still not something we would want to judge people on. And it's just like, you're allowed to bring ugly versions of yourself to the space.
It's like all the versions of yourself can show up on the page. And we have a very strong rule of like, you don't have to share everything that you put down, even though we encourage you to experience connection and mm-hmm. meeting each other and things like that. And also, you don't have to like hardcore participate in every week if you feel like maybe it's best because of where you're at to lean back a little bit while other people are working on their own stuff. You know, oftentimes I think there are other spaces, again, because of like the rules and regulations that I understand, you're kind of also pushed to perform or to like get something out of something. Mm-hmm. And even that can be kind of like distressing.
Yeah.
Because what if you're just like, I'm exactly where I am when this event started. Mm-hmm. Like, that's okay. The whole point was just like, you worked on what's important for you in the way that matter to you. And like really quickly to go along with that, if you're interested in looking at our Eventsbrite page and looking at more details around that, we will be offering like an intake process just to understand where everyone is at, generally speaking, so that we can be more prepared to like cultivate and hold the space in an ethical and honorable way. So we are making room for all the parts of us, especially on paper. But at the same time, we will be keeping an eye on just sort of like where everyone is at and doing our best to curate the space that best suits everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or if an individual has something comes up, that is something we can address pretty proactively as well. We understand.
Yeah, I think for both of us, this workshop is, and first and foremost, about empathy. We want to express to people, we see them, we hear them, we're with them, and we're there to support them. And then secondly, it's to support through fostering of writing, because we know that writing can transform, you know, just a bunch of different feelings into a play or a TV show or a short story or even a journal that you lock up tight and never show a single human being. But that still has this, you know, therapeutic vibe, because you finally are able to express yourself in ways you probably weren't able to before.
And any adjustments or like anything that comes up, we're going to be looking at it based on like its impact on you, the participants, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to make things right or wrong about each person's like personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just trying to cultivate the space as best as we can to be as inclusive as possible. And that means acknowledging if someone has a more individual experience that should be addressed first, versus like, maybe this is something that they can check out at another time. Maybe right now is not the best time for them. But if there's any, is there anything else that you want to add?
Just that, you know, everyone is indeed at their own spots in their own journey. And these journeys are long and complicated. But the beauty of being in a group like this is that we can come together and then go back on our own journeys equipped with, I guess, make like a bad fantasy or D&D reference, like equipped with magic spells they wouldn't have before because we've been in this group. And I think that is the thing I want most for people, is to feel like at the end they have some magic spells to go on their individual journey that they didn't have before.
And if you are instead, maybe you might need or are seeking therapy or coaching or something else, believe me, we are more than ready to have a conversation around that. We are very familiar with it. This is not about making anything better or wrong or worse or anything like that. We're just creating a space that kind of combines some of the elements that has helped our individual journeys and also that we've seen others benefit from, and seeing what happens.
So. Yeah, it's, to quote my great psychopathology professor, it's often never one or the other. It's often both and. So
yep.
This is very much a not a replacement for anything, but an additional space for, you know, helping people in their journeys.
Yep. What a juicy conversation today. All right, so in this episode, if you look in the show notes, I'm going to post the link to the events page so that you can check out more about the workshop and a little bit more about us, and also register, because we are capping how many people can enter this workshop, again, based on our own ethics and our intuition with that. So please check it out. If you have any questions around resources or payment plans or things like that, we have an email as well for that. And we're happy to engage with individuals around conversations like that. So, yeah. But also, lastly, thank you, Tara, for going on this wild journey with me.
And thank you for inviting me and thinking of me as, you know, worthy of doing this work, because I have always wanted to, you know, do something like this, like have some sort of community work, but I just didn't know what kind of avenue that would happen in. So I'm glad that I'm getting to do this with you.
I was basically waiting for you to say like you want to do it, because I was going to be like asking you about literature and asking you, hey, what do you think about this slide deck? So it was kind of inevitable anyway. So anyway, folks should definitely join us. And, you know, truthfully, I think this can be a lot of like magic and fun, even alongside grief. I know it's wild. You never know what can happen. So thanks, Tara, for today.
Thank you.